Thank you for joining me. I am Brett Kelly, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fishery science. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow the podcast on Twitter at FisheriesPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or support the show on patreon.com/fisheriespodcast. If you're interested in showing off your support for the show in a different way, or maybe sporting a favorite fish species, go check out our merch over at the Fisheries Podcast Fan Shop, hosted by Teespring, where you can find t-shirts, hats, stickers, and more. Look for the link to all those websites and merch in our show notes. As for today, I'm excited to chat with Sam Shike. Sam grew up in Wisconsin and attended the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point for his bachelor's, where he graduated in 2016. Afterwards, he attended Eastern Illinois University for his master's and graduated in 2019. And his thesis there was focused on silver and bighead carp reproduction in tributaries of the Illinois and Wabash rivers. And now he currently works for the Illinois Natural History Survey as a large river fisheries ecologist. And without further ado, welcome to the Fisheries Podcast, Sam.
Thanks, Brett. I'm happy to be here. I've been listening to the show for a while now, and it's pretty cool to actually be on it. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. It's good to have you. But I think as an icebreaker, I'm going to have to take a quote from your Twitter bio, and I'll let you sort of elaborate. It says, your favorite fish ecologist that plays Tupac on the piano. So how long have you been playing piano, and when did you pick up the Tupac songs to play?
So that's funny you ask. I actually took piano lessons in, I want to say, fourth and fifth grade, and gave it up for quite some time. And funny enough, it was actually someone I met at a national AFS conference in Tampa. Stephen Parker, he's actually a PhD student down in Florida, that kind of got me back into the piano / keyboard grind. We were actually at a conference during a social. There was a piano in one of the rooms, and he played the intro to an Outkast song. And I was like, man, that was really cool. And yeah, I got a keyboard a few years later. And yeah, I play all kinds of different genres. Tupac, even some Metallica, some Lumineers, kind of all over the board, but just kind of fun playing stuff that people can relate to, as opposed to, you know, when you're learning Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or something like that. but yeah, I enjoy it. And I don't mean to talk bad on anybody else's fish ecologist that also plays Tupac, but I'd like to think I'm most people's favorite.
Well, off of the long list of people that I know that do that, I definitely think you're my favorite. So,
well, I appreciate it.
But no, that's cool. It's always good to see what people's different outlets are outside of fisheries. So, Sam, growing up in Wisconsin, what was one of your favorite memories surrounding fish or fisheries, aquatic systems in general? Is there something that you could, you know, draw from that maybe led you to what you're doing now?
I would say I grew up a few city blocks away from the shores of Lake Winnebago, which is a really strong walleye fishery. And going out there with my dad and grandpa and often talking about regulations and how managers sample fish, and based on that, they set bag limits and things like that. And that just really was one of the things that got me interested in managing or studying a fishery or group of fish populations. So those are definitely some of my favorite memories, just out on the water with my dad, grandpa, and uncle.
Yeah, some of my fondest memories from growing up, and what I really attribute to what got me into this field and what I even wrote about in my application letter to Clemson's Wildlife and Fisheries Biology program, was stories about my grandfather taking me fishing in a family pond that he had built and catching bass and bluegill and crappie and whatever else basically that had been stocked in the time. And I think it was mostly all about the fishing, and sort of later appreciated managing those systems. But I guess I'm glad I ended up going the route that I did. So it's cool to hear that you had a pretty similar memory that did it for you too. That's pretty neat.
Absolutely, yeah. Those first bass and bluegills, I think for a lot of us, are really the gateway drug into fisheries science. So yeah, you love hearing it and still really remember those times fondly.
So I know you said you were pretty close to Lake Winnebago, if that's correct, right?
Yes, sir.
So how close would you say you grew up from Stevens Point? Is that a school that you knew about? Some of your high school buddies were also going there. How did you seek out Stevens Point? Was it due to their natural resources program?
So I grew up about 1 hour and 10 minutes away from Stevens Point. I wouldn't say it was ever much to do with like athletics or really even all that high on my radar coming up through high school. But I really got to give credit to my mom. She really pushed me to tour a lot of different schools that otherwise wouldn't have toured. I don't know. It wasn't a super appealing thing to do on a weekend to, I don't know, let's go check out this college instead of hanging out with friends. But I toured Stevens Point and I could really see how they had an emphasis on natural resources and, all the different programs, forestry, wildlife, fisheries, wetlands, all this different stuff. And there's a nature preserve right off campus. They had the Wisconsin River right there. All of the professors and faculty were super friendly and, going up for that visit, I wasn't even really looking forward to it, but after spending a day on the campus, I was really excited about it and ended up going there. So, and I'm very happy I did.
So many of the people that I chat with that go there talk about how awesome the Tree Haven summer program is. And I know some of the people that listen to the show maybe are looking at good fisheries programs throughout the country. And I personally think that it kind of sets apart Stevens Point from other schools. And I wish that, I had been able to do something like that. So what was your experience with that program?
So yeah, I completely agree. Tree Haven was an awesome program. For those that don't know, it's a 6-week summer field session dedicated to 1 week to fisheries, another week to wildlife, a week to soils, forestry. I know I'm forgetting a few, but that's the gist of it. But it's an awesome program. It's you definitely do have some coursework and some homework, but almost every day, you're either out in the woods, on a stream, on a lake, in a prairie, and yeah, it was a great experience. You're staying in a cabin with five other natural resources people, maybe three or four, but yeah, you're in a cabin with a bunch of other natural resources people. You're up in northern Wisconsin, so the fishing is awesome. I figured a few people listening would want to know, but it's a great program, and it really gives you some hands-on experience that you can put down on a resume and right away be ahead of a lot of other people applying to jobs the following summer. So Tree Haven was an awesome experience that I'm very grateful for.
Oh, that's great. If people are interested in the program, I'll have a link to Tree Haven in today's show notes. And yeah, go check it out. Well, you settle the debate. Is it the Northwoods? Because I know some people that get pretty heated about whether or not Stevens Point is the Northwoods or not.
Oh man, that's tough. Highway 10 goes right through the city, so I'd say it's right on the border. Once you get north of Stevens Point, I'd call it the Northwoods, in
There
my
you
humble
go.
opinion.
Yeah. I don't want to get you in trouble with any of the people you grew up with, but
No,
I
that could get
just
ugly.
just a funny question that I've had that I've definitely been a part of that conversation before, but being an outsider, I didn't have much of a dog in that fight. So we've put it to bed. There you go. So your thesis at Eastern Illinois University was entitled "Big-Headed Carp: Spatial Reproductive Dynamics and Population Genetics in Large River Tributaries." So I guess maybe one of my first questions would be, what were some of the tributaries that were included in your study?
So we wanted to look at tributaries of both the Wabash River, which my EIU colleagues would give me quite a bit of crap if I didn't tell everybody that it's the largest unimpounded river east of the Mississippi. But anyways, the three tributaries of the Wabash I studied were the Vermilion, the Embera, it looks like embarrassed, but pronounced Embera, and the Little Wabash. And then the three tribs of the Illinois River I studied were the Spoon, Sangamon, and Mackinac.
Very cool. Yeah, I guess that's that title, that river, and that description, that's definitely worth saying something, because given the density of dams across the country, that's pretty impressive that a large river system like that can be free flowing. So that's pretty cool.
Yep, I agree. And it flows into the Ohio, which is very highly impounded for navigation and is in very, very close proximity to the Illinois as well, which also has a ton of dams. So it's definitely a unique river to study that doesn't get a whole lot of publicity, but it's a unique, very unique system.
So I guess given that your thesis covered pretty wide range of objectives, some relating to reproductive dynamics and others relating to population genetics, what were some of the field techniques that you guys used in your sampling? And then maybe how did you use that data or those samples to, bring it back to the lab and process that information?
So for our larval sampling, we used passive drift nets that simply sat in the water and filtered out the eggs and larvae from the river drifting downriver. And we also used larval push nets, which are mounted to the bow of a boat, which is driven upriver and also filters the eggs and larvae. The larval push that's driven upriver is kind of meant to sample some of those larger or later stage larvae that might be able to swim a little better and not get swept into those drift nets. We also did a little bit of work with adults for the population genetics. And for that, we used boat electrofishing, took fin clips and brought them back to the lab, extracted some DNA, and shipped them off to our colleagues at Georgia Southern University that did some of the PCR and genetic analysis with us. And yeah, it was a good variety of work we did with those, and definitely a good variety of experience.
Yeah, definitely sounds like it. Did you have some folks at EIU that were helping you do that sampling, or maybe from Department of Natural Resources, or were you able to hire some field technicians for your crew, or maybe a mixture of all of the above?
So we had quite a few interns at Eastern Illinois that helped out with the work. We also had my partner in crime, Kelly Hanser, who actually did a lot of the same sampling. We had the same field work. I analyzed the larval silver and bighead carp. She analyzed all the larval catostomids. So her and I did a lot of sampling together, as well as interns through my 2 years at Eastern Illinois. Definitely grateful for all their hard work. Project would not be possible without them. Yeah, had a lot of help from a lot of people.
Yeah, it seems like behind every graduate project, really, there's always the interns or technicians that I don't know what in the world I would have done without the small army that I was able to employ over my 2 years. So definitely really grateful to have them for stream sampling. And I mean, on that note, I guess field work is one of the more romanticized parts of fishery science. And for good cause, there's awesome, fishes across the watersheds that everyone that I've interviewed studies, and between all of the cool techniques and new things that you can learn. I mean, field work is definitely one of the foundational parts of our field. But it can also be notoriously stressful and unpredictable. So sometimes I like to ask about fieldwork fails, but also some fieldwork wins. Anything, coming to your brain that you'd like to share with us on that note?
Absolutely. And first of all, I'd like to pass on a quote, paraphrasing from my graduate advisor, Dr. Colombo, said, "The days where everything goes perfectly well, it's 70 and sunny, and you get all the samples, nothing goes wrong. When you see your friends at a conference in 30 years and you're sipping a beer, nobody remembers those days. The days that you're going to reminisce and smile back on are the days where stuff went wrong, and at the end of the day, all you can do is give it your best and laugh at it."
For sure. Yeah, that's a good one.
But to answer your question, we had a day. We were larval fish sampling on the Spoon River, Seville, Illinois, population 8, I believe, and our truck got stuck underneath a bridge. And the more our tires spun, the closer our truck and trailer were getting to a ledge that was like leading towards the river. And long story short, we went knocking door to door, and a farmer got his tractor. And even with his tractor, our truck and trailer didn't move until we put it in four low and then hit the gas. And then his tractor was able to pull us out of the mud. It was just a rough mud clay mixture that was just sucking our truck in, but we made it out. Another stressful
you're here
time
to tell the tale.
we made it out. That farmer, I wish I actually knew his first and last name. I don't, but he did make it into my thesis acknowledgments.
There you go. Yeah, send him a Christmas card every year.
I'd be more than willing to. I was really appreciative of that guy. That was a long day. As far as some of the wins, we had a day where it was another really long, I don't know, 12, 14-hour field day. And very last sample of the day, and we could not get our rope and anchor off bottom. And we knew it was stuck on some sort of tree, and, you know, the sun was going down, and there was minimal current, and ended up, which I don't necessarily recommend this, but if there's minimal current and you have people around, I took off my life jacket and I swam down and was able to move this tree stump and get the anchor out. And it made for a great picture of me kind of holding up the anchor for my friend to take a picture. And I was told by a lab mate that I looked like a dad really proud of his do it at home project or DIY project holding up that anchor. So I was pretty honored. It was kind of a fun way to end the day. Just happy to get our anchor back. We got the sample and got to go eat dinner right after that. So that was
there you
was
go
a good time.
Yeah, didn't have to chop your anchor off or anything. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely a win.
Absolutely. And you take them when you can get them.
So I guess overall, and maybe talking more results, but without, you know, spoiling too much of your thesis or potentially something that you, you know, want to publish, you know, we definitely want people to go and dig into those resources more. But what was maybe one of the more surprising or most surprising things that you found after, you know, you're done analyzing all the data and you finish all your research? What was something that stood out to you?
So one thing that was really surprising and stood out, and I would have never really noticed this. I didn't incorporate it into some of the analysis I did, but was kind of the simplicity that one of the reviewers pointed out. I had all these variables, all these equations, and it really came down to the tributaries that were producing the most bighead and silver carp larvae had the biggest watersheds. We were looking at, okay, these tributaries are slightly warmer, they're more turbid, they have more discharge, they have a longer free-flowing distance. And it never really occurred to myself or my collaborators, well, most of these are just factors of a large watershed. And yeah, thanks to the reviewer that pointed that out, and that ended up being a really cool finding. And whenever you can simplify your findings and make it easier to understand, that's always a good thing. So that was one thing that really stood out, and something that was really cool that came out of my master's project.
So is that, you said reviewer, is that paper available for people to go check out or still in review or?
So the paper has been accepted. However, it's part of a special edition on invasive carp early life stages and reproduction, which the special edition hasn't had all the publications come together yet. So I don't know the specific date that that'll be officially published and everything will be available to read. But it will be at some point. That's I can say that much.
That's totally fine. We'll keep people interested, and so we'll maybe put some links into obviously your thesis, and you know, definitely follow Sam on Twitter. I'm sure you'll, you know, put it out there for the people whenever it is available. But obviously, congratulations on publishing your master's work. I'm still in the middle of attempting to publish the second half of my thesis as well, and it's not an easy feat. So, you know, congratulations, and I'll look forward to reading it. That's for sure.
Thanks, Brett. Yeah, I appreciate that. Like you said, it's definitely can be a long and arduous process, but very rewarding in the end. So yeah, thank you.
Graduate school overall, I think, can be a pretty great preparation ground for, you know, moving forward in someone's fisheries career. And I often try to ask people that have recently finished or graduated to kind of reflect on their experience and maybe translate that to folks that are considering a graduate degree, or maybe, you know, early into one. I know fall semester is when a lot of people potentially start, but you know, we have end of the semester coming up and summer, so people are going to be graduating from undergrad and starting to look at their summers and plan out for the future. So do you have any advice or maybe some things that you learned going through it that you wish you would have known before, and maybe something that you could give to the students in that position now?
So as far as students considering a graduate degree, first of all, I'm very glad I did go back and get my master's. It's definitely well worth it. I had originally planned on going on to grad school right after undergrad. Towards the end of my senior year of undergrad, I started to realize, let's take some time off. I was starting to feel a little burnt out. So I would say if you are really determined and still very motivated and not burnt out, go for it. But by all means, there's nothing wrong with getting more experience, honing in a little more on what you want to do, what you want to study, getting some more field experience. That's great too. Any advice I would take for someone going into grad school? I'll say what I said to one of my close friends that actually just started grad school in January is, it's going to be a lot of work. It'll probably be stressful at times, but just do what you can to stay on schedule. As long as you're continuing to work on things and staying on schedule. I use that term twice, but just doing what you can each day and continuing on doing what you need to do, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing that I noticed pretty early on into it is just a different sort of day-to-day mentality. You know, it's not necessarily that you can tick off a huge to-do list of these big tasks every day, but kind of just knowing that there's tiny little bits of a two or so some odd year task that you're trying to chip away at. And I think it can be really daunting to think about the project or the thesis in its entirety right at the beginning, but kind of just biting it off into smaller pieces and going from there is what I transitioned into. That type of mentality felt like it helped me out a lot. So I think your advice should translate really well. And, you know, if people have other questions related to that, feel free to reach out on Twitter to either of us. Obviously, we're not experts, but we both, you know, graduated here recently in 2020 and have some potential advice for anyone looking for it if they so choose.
Absolutely. And yeah, I fully agree. You're not going to, it can be overwhelming at times, but set realistic goals and just get a little bit done here and there. And I'm going to use it a third time. Just try to stay on schedule. I'm sticking with yeah. that. As they say, yeah, Rick and Morty, that's my catchphrase.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, man, that's a good catchphrase because you're exactly right. The name of the game. So, but now let's chat about your current position, because I'm sure that's what's fresh on your mind and, you know, what you get excited about on a day in and day out basis. So again, to reiterate, you are currently a large river fisheries ecologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey. So, I mean, based on the title, you obviously work on, you know, projects on large rivers related to fisheries ecology, but kind of, you know, what specifically are some objectives or projects that you're working on or toward while you're employed for INHS?
So there's two main projects that I co-lead. One of them is looking at one of our newest invasive species, or least known about invasive species, which is the black carp. They are generally a molluscivore. We've recently learned their diet's a little more diverse than just mussels and snails. But yeah, we're studying black carp in the Illinois River, looking at their bait preferences, as well as their range and abundance in the Illinois River. The second project I'm working on is evaluating the mass removal of invasive carp in the Peoria pool. So one of the main weapons that the Illinois DNR has used against invasive carps is by incentivizing commercial harvest of these fishes in the Peoria pool by providing an additional 10 cents per pound of these fish, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but get ready, I love throwing this number out there. From fall of 2019 through January of 2021, these commercial fishers harvested over 3.5 million pounds of these fishes.
Ooh.
And so you harvest 3.5 million pounds of anything out of one stretch of river, you're probably going to change the fish community a little bit. So myself and my partner, Jesse Williams, started electrofishing backwaters and side channels of the Illinois River in 2019 before that started. Last year, as it got going, and we're going to continue to sample that, looking at the change in the native fish community, change in the invasive carp population, look at population demographics, age and growth structure, or age structure and growth. And so yeah, that's the other project I'm working on. But we're really excited about both projects, really excited about gaining new knowledge on black carp, as well as this project that I think the 3.5 million pounds number kind of speaks for itself, that IDNR project has been successful. So continuing to evaluate that, we're all really excited about.
Yeah, all of a sudden 10 cents per pound ends up being a pretty important figure. So that's pretty incredible that their commercial harvest has been that high and there's been some added interest. So you'll have tons of fisheries data. It's good that you're able to get out and about and sort of resume all your field sampling. Is 2021 shaping up to be a pretty status quo year for you guys? You're able to get out and do your sampling as it looks like right now?
So far, so good as far as 2021. I'm certainly optimistic as far as this field season goes. Generally, my field season doesn't start until June. However, there mm-hmm. is a oxbow lake down near the confluence of the Mississippi and Ohio rivers called Horseshoe Lake that during years of high waters on the Mississippi, a levee gets breached and a bunch of black carp are in there, I guess, to... long story short, there's a high density population of black carp. And so we're tentatively planning the first 2 weeks of doing a bunch of hoop netting down there to continue to look at that bait preference question. We have hoop nets baited with a cottonseed based bait, as well as a clam bait, which are two baits that have been used to harvest them before. So yeah, we're planning on doing that the first 2 weeks, and the rest of our field's work will start in mid-June and go through the end of October. And a lot of my coworkers, as well as myself, are very optimistic that things are going to be, I don't want to say back to normal, because I feel like that's been getting used too much lately.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, it's always nice to have things to look forward to. And even if some of those things are trying to capture invasive species, but, you know, getting out into the field after a long and tough winter can be really gratifying and rewarding. But it seems like this position is a pretty natural progression, given where you grew up, where you like to recreate, you know, what you've researched throughout your master's project. And I guess we typically save this dream job question for the end of the show, but how does what you're doing right now kind of stack up? I mean, it sounds like you're doing some of the things that are kind of cutting edge, or at least leading, you know, the controversial topics of invasive species in the country. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I truly love my job. As far as a dream job, I don't know. Those are big words, but hey, it's an awesome job. If we could move everything, all the good stuff we have here, closer to family or closer to friends, I mean, hey, maybe then it certainly would be. But I'm mm-hmm. really happy here. I definitely love the combination of field work as well as like decision making and study design and you know, different things I get to have my hands in here at Illinois River Biological Station. The coworkers and the number of new faces I get to work with every year. It's pretty darn close to a dream job. So definitely stacks up pretty well.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And I guess I'd like to kind of just like end out the formal part of the interview by maybe having a more philosophical question. I've been really trying to get people thinking deep recently on my interviews, but you know, given that so many people are drawn to flowing waters, myself included, and that, you know, flowing systems and rivers and streams have such a rich lore surrounding them, what do you think it is about, you know, that Mississippi River drainage and its tributaries that sort of draws you in and, you know, keeps you motivated to, you know, keep digging and keep researching and keep working to, you know, find out new things? And what is it that keeps you driven, I suppose?
Well, I think one thing that's really cool about it is how vast of a network it is, or how vast of a water system it is. It's huge, but at the same time, it's all connected. So one action here or one cool research finding here can really help us better understand, maybe not all of it, but can help us understand a part of the system that can lead to better management or better understanding of the whole system. So that's one thing I think about. And as far as what draws us to water, I remember having a conversation with one of my professors in undergrad. I think we've just kind of evolved to be curious and to live near water, and whether for the aesthetics or for the fish or just for the water itself, I just think we're definitely meant to live near water and flowing water, like you said. And yeah, it's just something that I think so many of us love and just really fortunate to get to work on.
Yeah, right on. No, I love that. I like ending on that note. That's a strong thing for people to be thinking about. And, you know, as it's starting to warm up here this spring, you know, get out and go be near in on some water and
you know, absolutely
do some recreating. I'm really excited that we are thawing out here in north central Idaho, and I'm excited to get out and about. So now the tough part of the interview is over. We have a set number of questions that we like to ask each of our guests on the show. And first off, we always start with, what is your favorite fish? And this can either be to fish for or to research, or maybe it's a fish you have never even really interacted with much, but you know it exists and you appreciate that fish.
So that's a tough question. And if it wasn't for me listening to these podcasts in the past, I probably wouldn't have thought about it as much and wouldn't have an answer ready for you. But my favorite fish is the burbot. I have caught a few in my lifetime through the ice on Lake Winnebago when they've been spawning. And part of what I love about them is they're just so mysterious. When they're not spawning, they're so hard to find. When they're not spawning, they're often solitary, really dispersed. And they're also, I believe, the only deep water predator in Lake Michigan that didn't need to be reintroduced after the sea lamprey. They survived the sea lamprey invasion. They were never rehabilitated from stocking, as far as I'm aware. And and they just That's look cool. really cool. They're an awesome fish. So I love me some burbot. Yeah, cool fish.
Yeah, that's cool. So I guess we've asked about sort of that dream job, but maybe is there a location that, and maybe you talked about, you know, getting back to family or closer to family at some point, but is there a dream living situation, location that is calling to you later in life or maybe even right now?
Well, I guess I certainly don't have any place calling me right now. I'm certainly happy where I'm at. Where I grew up though, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, you're an hour from the Bay of Green Bay, hour and a half from Lake Michigan and all the Great Lakes fisheries. You have Lake Winnebago and the awesome diversity there, and there's the Wisconsin and Mississippi rivers, both a few hours as well. So if we could just bring all of that right here to where I'm at, that I think that would be the dream living situation. It's a fictional combination, but that would be the dream.
If there was one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, you know, one sort of lasting message that everyone that listened to today's episode could take away from this interview, what do you think that would be?
So I could go back and forth on this. There's quite a few things that come to mind, but one is that it's okay to say, I don't know. There's a lot of times where I was in elementary or middle school, and a teacher said, I don't know, but I'll get back to you on that. And that really made them seem down to earth, and like they didn't need to be right, but they wanted to get it right. They wanted to look into the question and give me a better answer than what they had in their brain. And I think whether that's me or you giving a presentation to a bunch of our peers, or that's me or you at the boat ramp, and an angler comes up and asks us a question saying, I don't know, but let me get your phone number, email, or let me talk to you later about this. That's perfectly fine. You know, I like to consider myself fairly knowledgeable, but there's a lot of stuff that we don't know. And that's okay.
I love that. I think that is right on the money, and especially when dealing with the public, you'd rather get it right at a later date and time than, you know, get it wrong right then and there, and have them either disseminate that information or know that maybe your answer wasn't as wholehearted as it could have been, or anything else. So I like that. Well, Sam, I really appreciate you being a guest on the show. I had a great time. But if people want to connect with you online or learn more about your work, or maybe, you know, what's going on at the, you know, Illinois River Biological Station, where can they find you guys? And anything that you mentioned, I'll be sure to put in the show notes for today's episode.
So you can find me on Twitter at Samuel J and then Shaik, it's Schaik. Also, my email is sshaik@illinois.edu, spelled the same way. I'm sure Brett will put that in the notes. But yeah, feel free to reach out. Definitely always happy to talk fish, if you couldn't tell by how much rambling about them I did over the course of this show. And yeah, feel free to reach out.
Well, thank you everyone for listening to this 114th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. Again, please check out today's show notes for everything that Sam mentioned. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can also find me on Twitter at BBK_95. The podcast is at Fisheries Pod. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. Or, you know, feel free to send us an email at feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. Again, we really hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can always download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening apps, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com, hosted by Podbean. Don't forget to head over to our Patreon page or our merch store at hosted by Teespring if you want to support the show. I'm Brett Kelly. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, it's okay to say, I don't know.